I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Robert McFarlane is one, of course, of Britain's foremost writers on nature, with books like Mountains of the Mind, Underland, and his best-selling children's book, The Lost Words. He's won countless prizes, the latest being the inaugural Western International Award, one of the world's largest prizes for an outstanding body of non-fiction work, and he certainly got that. Along with taking readers to high altitude, through wilderness and to subterranean depths with his writing, he's also a full-time professor at Cambridge University and a vocal environmental campaigner. Robert joins me now. Well, Robert, since we last spoke, you've added another string to your bow. When did this musical career begin?
Oh, hi, Mariella. That began in the first week of lockdown. I'd already worked with musicians around music arising from The Lost Words, which I sort of wrote as songs, really, songs for children, I guess, words that tumbled in their mouths. But Johnny Flynn and I put our heads together in that first week of lockdown when suddenly we were terrified and we were also strapped to a single place, really. And so we just began to pass lyrics back and forth, and they grew into songs, and songs grew into an album, the first song of which is the one you just heard, the Black Dog. Yeah, 10 Degrees of Strange, it's called.
Would you say that they're campaigning songs?
Well, they have their root in the oldest written story that we know, which is the Epic of Gilgamesh, which is about 4,500 years old in its oldest form. And that's the first story of deforestation. It's basically it's about ecocide. Gilgamesh and Enkidu travel across the desert and they kill the forest demon, the spirit of the forest, the spirit of the forest life, who's called Humbaba. And then they cut down all the trees. So, you know, literature has been warning us for as long as it's been written down. And these songs are new versions of those warnings, I guess.
Well, that's quite depressing in a way, isn't it? Because if you look at the news headlines, particularly today, and I'm very glad I have you on today, it seems like we haven't really been taking in the words we've been reading, or indeed the stories, mm-hmm. you know, over a very long history of time. I know your upcoming book is titled, I think, Is a River Alive? Mm-hmm. We'll discuss the answer to that question in a moment, perhaps. But I just wondered what your reaction was to today's news that water bills are going to rise by 40% to fix this sewage pollution crisis, or at least it's being discussed. I mean, the sense of urgency, I was told by one MP earlier in the programme, you know, it's going to take decades to sort out. We don't have decades, do we?
We don't have decades, but it's been decades in the making, and it's probably going to take decades to fix. It's a dismal story, a story of shareholder over extraction, and much of that money is kind of capital flight out of the UK. And Thames Water may well turn out to be the first of the dominoes. So, and our rivers are in desperate condition. They were in a desperate condition 50 years ago. And then when wonderful Roger Deakin, my mentor and friend, long since dead, wrote Waterlog, the great hymn to open water swimming that kind of sparked the Lido revival, he published that in 1999. And that was a sort of, in many ways, a high point of river health. And Roger could swim through Britain, as he put it, taking the frog's eye view, and not come out with ear infections and stomach infections. And so that was a sort of magical moment in a way. But since then, it's been very much downhill. We need new ideas and new structures.
Are you surprised at the absence of new ideas?
Things become so entrenched. I mean, so structurally intransigent. The book you mentioned that I'm working on now is A River Alive, to which my 9-year-old son replied, Dad, that's going to be a short book because The answer is yes.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. It is going to be quite a long book because it is a very complex story, but it's about the oldest idea, really, which is that the world around us is alive in complex ways. And that's there in Gilgamesh too. The original text talks about the forest as alive, as having a mind, you know, alive in a way that is greater than the sum of the lives it contains. Rivers are astonishing, enlivening forces. They create life, they bring life. We can feel it when you swim in clean water, when you sit on the banks of a fast flowing, clear watered river, you feel enlivened. And we have forgotten that idea. And I've been traveling in search of places where that idea has not been forced underground, or indeed where it's springing back up through the surface of the landscape, through this movement called the Rights of Nature movement, which seeks to recognize the aliveness of forests and rivers and mountains, and then recognize the rights that they possess, the right to flow freely, the right to be undammed or unpolluted.
And so have you found places then where there's political will as well as the will of the people to change the status quo?
Yeah, it's come from the people to power, as it were. I think that's one of the crucial things, is it's best grown from the ground up. And we're just starting to see that happen here in the UK. I think it was the river, one of the Sussex rivers, recently had its rights declared and its status as a rights bearing being recognised by the district councils. Now that doesn't have a regulatory purchase, as it were, but it's the beginning of a huge conceptual imaginative shift, which took centuries to die as an idea, but needs to be regrown within decades. But in Ecuador, for example, in 2008, Ecuador revised its constitution, and they included in the new constitution four articles recognizing and guaranteeing the rights of nature. If you have constitutional leverage, you have power, and it's taken about a decade for that power to actually be seen on the ground. But I was in a cedar wood, a cedar forest called Los Cedros, a cloud forest, the cedars it means. And that was protected in November 21 by an amazingly powerful constitutional court ruling that evicted a state mining company together with a multinational mining company from the forest. It just said, no, the rights of nature are what must be guaranteed here, and they are the more powerful rights, and off you go.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because it does seem to be, one particular issue on which the public and the government are completely divided. Because my inbox today on this news, and also, you know, obviously responding because it was the Times and the Sunday Times who did their cleanup campaign rather brilliantly, letting people know what state our waterways were in. And yet, you know, one feels, like I said to you earlier, you know, I spoke to an MP today who talked about, you know, it'll take decades to sort out. And you sort of feel like you want to hear someone who's on fire with the determination to sort it out, not making you feel like this is something that, you know, will eventually, you know, in the spirit of time happen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, there is fire, isn't there? I mean, Fergal Sharkey's on fire. Caitlin Moran has been fantastic on this issue, has really led on it and has written about the rights of nature with regard to rivers as well. I think so that ideas are growing. The fury is there. It seems the simplest of wishes to be able to drink and swim in water that will not poison us and for our rivers to be in good ecological health. And we look across the channel and we see people swimming in the centre of Paris. We see the Isar, the river that runs through Munich, which was rewilded. It was heavily canalized in the 70s. And then later it became freed from those constraints. And it became this wonderful wandering river that the world that the city swims in. It's and you can see the social life that gathers around the river and is enlivened by it. It's human and it's more than human. I swam there, and in the shallows, grey mullet just sort of fin, and you move past them and they move past you. It was a wonderful vision of what a river city could be.
You mentioned seeing fish swim by. Chris from Sheffield has been in touch saying, love the show as always. Thank you very much, Chris. It's not just the water company scandal that destroys our waterways. I'm an angler and I see the vast amount of litter in rivers and lakes. The public should be ashamed of themselves. I mean, we do have a hand in this as well, don't we? The idea that somebody else should always sort it out is not helpful on issues like this or indeed on climate.
No, absolutely. My feeling is that, I mean, if we think of that in context of the Access campaign, for example, the current growing roar of the Right to Roam campaign in England, which wants to open up a lot more ground to public access than just the 130 odd thousand miles of footpath on the grounds of public and well-being and the well-being of nature itself. With those rights, the right of access must come responsibilities. And we've all seen the photographs that go viral of the effectively Glastonburyization, as it were, of the countryside camping sites that are ill maintained. But that's not wild camping. That's not responsible access. It's fly camping. And we need education. The government has put almost no money into the countryside code I grew up with, and you probably did too, Mariella, a countryside code that we were aware of. It was kind of, it was there from early learning. Do you remember?
Yeah, absolutely. And just simple things like shutting gates you know, I mean, they're just very, very basic stuff that I think every child, you know, in my age group knew, you know, in my classroom.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a basic literacy, and it's part of a basic literacy of what I call nearby nature, the lost words, which you touched on, and the lost spells, which followed it up, these books I made with Jackie Morris, they wanted nothing more or less significant than to put the words of everyday nature, the nature we live with, that we share our landscapes and lives with, back into the mouths of children and their stories and their songs. So acorn, bramble, bluebell, conker, these were the words that were taken out of a widely used children's dictionary in 2007. And Jackie and I just thought that we would write spell poems, and Jackie would paint these words back into life, as it were. So I think a sort of an everyday literacy of the country, of the land, as it were, has fallen and from us and needs to be grown back into us.
And it seems that it really does have to start with children. Because if you start with a love of well, in fact, I think we all start with a love, a fascination of the natural world, don't we? And then we sort of have it beaten out of us.
Well, yeah, I sometimes describe children as wondernauts. That's what they voyage in. That's what they explore. They are absolute naturals at nature. And one of the lovely things with the Lost Words is that it's been such a hopeful movement. It hasn't been a kind of admonition, look at what you cannot do, look at what you've forgotten how to say. It's been a celebration of those words and the lives that they connote. And the children have, I mean, there are copies of the books in almost every primary school in England, Wales and Scotland now after crowdfunding campaigns. And the children kind of gather, they learn the poems by heart, they perform them as they speak them. So Jackdaw, for example, begins Jackdaw, circling the back door, showing off your knack for, letting rip the high core, through cutting through the calm core.
It's like, a wrap, You might get a stage at Glastonbury next year if you carry on like that.
Only if I can remember my words. They do it much better than I do. But yeah, it's sort of making nature fun again from the earliest of years, and outdoor learning as well is a huge part of that. School, it's really hard for schools, particularly in England, to learn outdoors. Green space can be hard to reach. The red tape that you have to cut to learn outdoors is or meet fulfilled.
Yeah, I mean, you've said something, and I thought that's so obvious. Why did we not think of that? Which is often where the reaction to the best ideas. But you know, why doesn't every primary school get twinned with a local farm?
Yeah, because so often this awful opposition is you know, farmers butting up against conservationists, and many farmers are fabulous stewards of the land, love it and know it so much better. Children don't know in many ways where and how their food comes from. So yeah, that was part of a manifesto that that Chris Packham and Patrick Barkham and I and others wrote and edited, and then in 2018 then we delivered on a march for nature led by children, led by young people to the government, to Whitehall. And yeah, that was one of the ideas. And also children planting city trees. Our cities should be forests. In fact, London is a forest. It's got about 8.5 million trees and about 9 million people. It's a wonderful forest city. It's got staghorn beetles. It's got bitterns in the marshes inside the M25. You know, remembering that Londerners live in a wildwood.
You've now won this Western Prize for nonfiction, which is a big new award. And I wondered, you know, because it's for all your work, it's not for a specific book, whether that's sort of given you an opportunity to look back on what you've done and think of what connects it all. I mean, is it a campaigning zeal? Is it an illustrative thing? You said about, because mountaineering was your first love, wasn't it? You said it's partly about being in love with the mountains, partly about, you know, a degree of narcissism, perhaps. But you know, what is it that first prompted you to write about nature, and how much more important does it feel now, even than when you started out, I suppose?
Yeah, well, there's lots of questions there.
Yeah, sorry, I'm trying to cram them all into my. That was my last question.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll try and
unpick
them off
that. Will
keep it short. No, the award, which comes from Canada, but yeah, recognises a body of work, as you say. I'm glad I wasn't at the wheel of the car that I was driving home from the mountains at the time. I was in the passenger seat, or else I might well have ended up in the ditch. The news came completely out of the blue, and it felt tremendously affirming. It was one of those things that just says keep going. You've been steering in the right direction for the past 20 years. And writing's a lonely business. Nonfiction's a weird thing. Why do we call it nonfiction? Why do we say what it isn't? We define it almost as a failure from the beginning. It can't do the things that fiction does, but it can. It has rhythm and suspense and plot and pattern and character and dialogue and all of those things. To me, it's this wonderful world of opportunity to make language behave strangely and carry thoughts into hearts and dreams into minds and move people. So I always balk at being described as a nature writer, or at least I say, well, if nature includes why people die on mountaintops, how we bury nuclear waste, what our future in the Anthropocene is, you know, nature encloses us. It is everything. And so, in a way, I think all writing is nature writing at the moment. But my books have been joined by a longing to explore these relationships between our hearts, our imaginations, and the living world around us. It began with mountains. I'm now wading upstream in a river of thought that is more vigorous than any I've ever stepped into before. At a time when we understand the risks and the perils of the crumbling ecological brink we stand on.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.